You're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome to the Ready Room, show number 43, Interdimensional Booty Call. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me today is Greg Harbin. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including new details about Star Trek London, CBS nixing New Voyages and Spinrad, Phase 2's The Child, Chris Duhon as Scotty, the complete First Contact score, the Think Geek inflatable captain's chair, and George Takei on JJ. Then in the future, we'll be discussing Deep Space Nine's take on the Mirror Universe. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Greg. How are you this week?
Chris, I am doing wonderfully. A word of warning before we get started. I've been watching Game of Thrones all week. And I don't know if you've seen Game of Thrones, but this is a good show. And I believe, no more Battlestar references, I will be comparing everything in Star Trek to Game of Thrones. So prepare yourself. How are you doing?
So basically, you're telling me that I need to go source some new sound clips.
Yes.
To splice into the Ready Room, right? Okay. Oh goodness. It's been crazy, Greg. I guess we should tell our listeners. Now we didn't have a show last week, so a couple things. I've had a lot of things going on with my schedule, and then of course, Greg, you were at the Emerald City Comic Con with Larry.
That's right. I was with Larry, Will Wheaton, and George Takei. Oh my.
Oh my. So we had a lot going on, so we decided to take a week off, and things are still a little bit crazy here for me, but starting to settle down a little bit. Our listeners may have noticed just from the general low level of activity on Twitter that I haven't been around electronic devices or computers much for the past couple of weeks, but starting to get back in. So I'm looking forward to jumping back into things.
Yeah, it's kind of strange. This week we're recording and it's morning for me and night for you. This is almost the Mirror Universe version of the Ready Room today.
It really is. Yes, it's I think 7 a.m. for you, our starting time, and 11 p.m. for me. Yeah. So we're on the extreme edges here of time.
Yeah, and it's weird. Jadzia just showed up, and I made out with her, and I don't even know why. She's like a brother to me.
Did she slap you first, and then you made out with her?
Jadzia always strikes me.
Oh, goodness. Well, we got a lot of things to talk about. Why don't we just jump in to catch up, Greg? First thing, we got a letter the other day. I don't have any mailbag music yet. I'm sorry, but I am working on that production value.
You might say he sent us a raven. That's our first Game of Thrones reference.
All right. I haven't seen this, so I'm going to have to start digging out some sound clips here for this. All right, they don't say "so say we all" in Game of Thrones, do they?
No,
make
they
my
don't.
Life a lot easier.
Yeah, no, there's actually. Oh, we should talk. They do have. They are polytheists, so there are parallels there.
All right. Well, for our mailbag here, Greg, we got a letter from Alex McElroy in Richland, Washington, and this is coming off of. I don't remember, actually. So anyway, he says, "Hello, I really like listening to the Ready Room every week. Have you ever talked about the Next Generation episode Lessons? I would love to hear Picard playing in the most acoustically perfect spot on the Enterprise in full surround sound action." So I guess this is at least in reference to our 7.1 surround sound flute action.
Yes.
which, as you know, I spent a few thousand dollars just having a theater system installed in my living room in preparation for the Next Level Blu-ray release, just to hear that flute action.
Right, and not many people know that every episode of our show is done in 7.1 surround sound. You just don't have good enough speakers for it yet. But once you do, you'll hear it.
Yeah.
Just keep spending money.
We're always thinking ahead. Yeah. You know, we want to make sure our shows are ready for the next technological advance so we don't have to go back, you know, remaster or do anything like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, So what Alex says here, though, he says that one thing about Lessons is that he never knew that Picard had so many outfits. And he probably saw Garrick when the Enterprise went to Deep Space Nine in Birthright. And anyway, his question is, what do you think about the episode Lessons as a continuation of The Inner Light?
Ah.
Have you ever thought about that? I never really thought about that.
You know, it's been a while since I saw Lessons. Can you remind me of some of the parallels here?
Well, let's see. Now, you said that you, before the show, made out with Dax. Picard makes out with one of his crew members as they play music together in the Jeffries tubes, I think, basically.
Ah,
yes. This is all about.
I do recall. I do recall this episode now.
Yeah. So I guess the connection, maybe Picard learned his flute playing from his time in the Inner Light. Otherwise, yeah, I don't know. I've never really thought about it.
Yeah, it's interesting that Picard does have this whole, you know, for the whole rest of the show, he still has the flute with him. He still carries those memories with him. You know, it's one of the only episodes where they didn't press a gigantic red reset button. But they also don't really revisit it that much, but they haven't forgotten it, obviously. Once it came time, you know, this is like the end of season six, and they're saying, you know, remember that thing that happened to Picard a long time ago? We can reference it briefly and show that Picard still is learning the flute.
Right. Yeah. And I guess you could also think of it as a sequel to Captain's Holiday as well, right? Because he was, you know, getting busy with Vash on Ryza, and now he's getting busy with, I don't even remember her name now. I can picture her, but not her name.
Lieutenant Commander Darren.
Darren. Okay, in the Jeffries tubes.
Yes.
So, you know, but they're pulling threads from all over the place for that.
There were never enough women for Picard. He got maybe one every few seasons. I feel like Sisko was always finding somebody. Kirk, of course. But yeah, Picard, he it's really kind of sad. He never had anybody. He was a very lonely captain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I guess maybe if he had spent less time in sickbay talking to Beverly, you know, when he wasn't in sickbay talking to Beverly, then they were in his ready room on the sofa,
right,
you know, drinking tea and eating biscuits or whatever.
Right. I think the duplicate Picard from Allegiance actually saw more action in that one episode than Picard did for, you know, a good four or five seasons.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. So. Anyway, well, those are our thoughts. So, Alex, thanks for writing in. I'm not sure if we really answered your question there.
We promise to do Lessons at some point in the future. You know, it might be episode 654, but I promise we will get to Lessons.
We will. We will definitely eventually get to it. We'll eventually get to them all. We'll be old and gray by then, but we'll be sitting here talking about Star Trek together.
Did you see Brata Chaotica?
Yeah, I did, but you know, I just don't have the energy for the exclamation point anymore. All right, well, Greg, why don't we move on to our first news story this week? This is about Star Trek London, which has, you know, there's been a little bit of buzz going on around this. We didn't know much, but now we finally have some details.
Yeah, it looks like it's essentially a Star Trek convention taking place in London later on this year. Do we have any? It's October 19th through 21st at XL London. But do we have any news about who's actually going to be there or what sort of events we can expect?
Not yet. Now, I would be willing to bet money that Chase Masterson will be there.
Probably, yeah.
But otherwise, I don't know yet. They're going to announce on the 16th, I think it is, the first details of who the guests are going to be.
I see. So maybe
what they've said,
week from now or so.
Yeah, what they've said is that tickets will go on sale to the general public on April 30th, but on April 16th, if you have signed up to Starfleet, this is what they say. Now, I take this as meaning if you've gone to StarTrekLondon.com, the website, and you have registered. You could put your email in there to get more information.
Yeah, because I'm a little wary of actually signing up for Starfleet, because that's a long commitment that I'd have to make just to get details on Star Trek London. I mean, I don't want to end up in the Gamma Quadrant, you know, being shot at by the Dominion, just because I want to know, you know, is the Glommer going to be there?
Right. And it happens. I mean, look at it this way. You know, when Harry Kim signed up for Starfleet, all he wanted was details about this event going on in London. And look what happened to him. He ended up in the Delta Quadrant, and he had to live his whole life in Starfleet as an ensign.
Right.
I mean, so be careful. Now, if you want information, I suggest that you just put your email in at StarTrekLondon.com. Don't actually sign up for Starfleet.
Stay as far away from Captain Pike as you can. Now, it does sound like this might be a little more than just a convention. They say there's going to be realistic sets, props. There's going to be stunt shows. You know, perhaps they'll have LeVar Burton's stuntman there to do a barrel roll.
I hope so, because one thing that, you know, I've seen a lot of barrel rolls, but I have never seen one done British style.
Actually, I don't know. I watched Titanic 3D over the weekend, and there were a lot of bulkheads closing, a lot of barrel rolls being done. I never realized it before that.
Wow. Boy, wait till we do our podcast about Titanic. I'm going to have to do a lot of splicing in there. Yeah, so anyway, keep your eyes open. Information is going to be coming. The official website, they say, will be launching on the 16th of April, if I understand all the information correctly. I assume it will be the same URL, StarTrekLondon.com, but right now there's really nothing up there except a request information page.
Yeah.
So there will be more, and we'll find out. But yeah, it does sound like it's going to be a very large event.
Yeah. And I don't think this is the first convention in England, but it does sound like they're trying to make this a really big event. I don't know if you saw, Chris, but one of our listeners, Colin, actually made a picture based on last week's show. We were talking about Sir Patrick Stewart and his knighting. And if I were going to Star Trek London, I really want to go in Queen Elizabeth with a Bat'leth cosplay. So if you see QE with a Bat'leth, at the convention, please send us a picture. Let us know.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure this is not the first, you know, convention. But I think there hasn't been any in a while, maybe. I mentioned on a previous show, the guys on Trekmate were talking about how there hadn't been any big convention in London for a long time. And they're trying to drum something up. So, yeah. So here we go. That's
very cool.
Where we're headed to London. So watch for that coming up soon. All right. Well, what else do we have up in news, Greg?
Yes, well, we had talked about the lost Star Trek script for He Walked Among Us being sort of reappearing after apparently being stuck in a transporter buffer for 40 years. And apparently they were going to make it into an actual fan film, one of these New Voyages episodes. But Paramount has put the kibosh on it, saying, you know, we own this script. We want apparently to base the next Star Trek film on it, and you'd better stop and not make it, which is disappointing to a lot of people.
Yeah, it is. I mean, so New Voyages, they had talked to Norman Spinrad and offered him the opportunity to direct the episode, and they were going to actually make it according to his original vision, and he accepted, and he was going to be directing. And I think it would have been really interesting, but yeah, CBS came in and said, no, you can't do it. I mean, they're fully within their right to do that. You know, they commissioned, not CBS, but I guess who it would have been NBC back in those days, right?
Mm-hmm.
NBC, Daisy Lou, whatever. But they own the rights. You know, they've purchased these over the years, passed through Paramount to CBS. And so it is their property if they want to exercise that right. It's kind of odd. I remember when this came up, Greg, that you sent me an iMessage and you said, is this because this is what the next movie is about?
Right.
which I don't think, but it is kind of odd that they won't let them make it.
I mean, really, did CBS purchase all scripts, used or unused, when they were purchasing the TV rights as well? It seems a little strange. And also, as I pointed out to you and this article that Trek News mentions as well, they let them make the David Gerrold script Blood and Fire. Was that last year or the year before? And there's maybe just because there's been so much publicity over this, somebody looked at it and said, we just can't let this happen. But it's really odd and surprising and a shame.
Yeah, it is. It's weird. It's kind of weird. I think, your question, did they buy the rights to all scripts used or unused? I guess they probably did. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not even an unfrozen caveman lawyer. So, but I would assume that it's all rolled up into one big ball when they, you know, got all those rights. But so it's odd that they let them.
I guess if they did, I guess we can forget about the New Voyages episode, A Glamour's Holiday.
I think so.
Which was a phase two script that unfortunately never got filmed.
Right. And I know you're going to be heartbroken about that. And you're going to probably, get all your action figures together and you're going to actually film your own recreation of A Glamour's Holiday.
Yeah, I'm actually hiring Gabe Kerner to create a CG version of The Glamour that will be more advanced than anything you've ever seen.
Well, I hope it's as impressive as that CG Gorn that they had on Enterprise.
Blink, 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 blink. That's what the Gorn does now.
Yeah. So anyway, well, this is disappointing that it's not going to be there. But it hasn't stopped New Voyages or Phase 2 from producing other scripts, as we said, Blood and Fire. But there's another one that they've produced, which has just come out. Actually, the full episode is out. As of the 5th, I guess, so last week when people listened to this. And this is the original concept for The Child, which everyone knows from The Next Generation.
And everyone knows from Dork Trek as well, in a very memorable episode that I will not name here on the show.
That's right. Oh, and but I think most fans probably already know that The Child was originally conceived of as a script for Phase 2, when it was going to be the new Star Trek series in the late 70s. But then, of course, that series was terminated, and we got the motion picture instead. So this script was kind of still floating around.
But I'm a little confused. In Phase 2, this was going to be Ilea, who gets impregnated with the space baby. Is Ilea still around in the fan series? How does that work?
I don't think so. I think now I watched. They have a preview trailer. They actually have the whole episode out now. If you go to YouTube, I think the whole thing is up there. The whole 52-minute episode. But
wow.
I watched the teaser, which was like, I don't know, 3-4 minutes, and they don't name the character in that episode, but they do show one of the female crew members. It's very much like the scene with Troy, you know, with the little light energy being. Comes into her quarters and goes under the blankets and does some other things that Dork Trek would probably describe in a very entertaining way. And so that part is very similar. As for how the whole episode plays out, I'm going to have to actually watch the whole thing. But I don't know if it's Ilea or it's just another crew member.
I don't think
it's Ilea, but until I watch the whole thing.
Right.
Don't know for certain.
Well, again, we need to go and watch some of these and actually talk about them on the show. So upcoming, we'll do that. We have actually a lot of fan show news today with our next story, which is about, it's called Star Trek Continues, which is yet another Star Trek fan series.
Yes, it is. Now, do you think they would produce Glamour's Holiday?
We can only hope.
But this is some cool news, too. Now, I had not actually heard about Star Trek Continues until this past week. And I was looking around TrekNews.net, and they had the story there about Chris Doohan being cast as Scotty in this new series.
Well, this one sounds actually really rather interesting. They've cast Chris Doohan, who, of course, is fake Scottish, because he's the son of James Doohan, who played... Scotty in the original show.
So are you saying that all of James Doohan's family members are fake Scottish?
Yes, I am. You're saying?
Can they all do the accent the same
sure.
way that James Doohan could?
to the exact same level of perfection as James Doohan had on the original show.
I didn't realize that those abilities, you know, were passed genetically like that.
The seed is strong. Sorry, that's another Game of Thrones reference.
All right, man, I'm going to have to get some sound clips. But yeah, this is cool. So this show, they're recasting the same as they have done with Phase 2, New Voyages, recasting, and J.J. Abrams did it too, recasting Kirk and Spock and McCoy and, you know, all the main characters from the original series. And I think it's really cool that Chris Duhon is going to be playing the same character that his father played.
Yeah, and very interesting to a lot of our listeners as well. From Mythbusters, Grant Imahara will be playing Sulu, which will be quite interesting to see. I don't know if you've ever seen Mythbusters, Chris, but Grant can definitely pull off the Sulu.
You know, I don't think... I know the name of it, and but I don't think I've ever actually seen an episode. I don't think we get that over here.
Well, when Sulu decides to blow up a shuttlecraft just to see if he can, you'll understand why they cast him.
All right. Well, I'm looking forward to that. All right. Well, this... Oh, we should point out also that Chris Duhon is not the first time that he's going to be in any Star Trek things. I don't know if everyone picked up on his cameo in the JJ movie or not.
Yeah, I mean, if you freeze frame or just look there, he's a transport chief right along the Simon Pegg Scotty in at least one scene. And, you know, way back in 1979, he and his twin brother were in actually the original Star Trek film, the motion picture.
Now, do you think he denies having worn those uniforms?
I think he might have been too young to be in the uniform. I'm trying to remember what his scene was. He may have been a cadet or something. But I definitely would never admit to wearing one of those uniforms.
Only the big medallion, right?
Right. You know, I will say... Yeah. Speaking of seeing Larry at Emerald City last weekend, he gave me a copy of the Leonard McCoy comic series that is set post 5-year mission, pre motion picture. Yeah, those uniforms don't look too bad on the comic page.
I've seen some of the. I don't think I've read that series, but I've seen some of the covers from that series.
I
know what you're talking about.
They just have to, the covers, colors have to pop a little bit. You have to make sure you're framing them right and don't pan the camera down too much.
Now, am I right? Was there a cover where there was a disco ball hanging over him with the bell-bottom uniform pants?
It wouldn't surprise me. I'm not remembering that at the moment, but that sounds exactly in character.
I'm pretty sure it was. Wasn't it like Dr. McCoy, Frontier Doctor, and the comic was called Saturday Night Fever?
I don't know if you're joking. This actually does sound like it could be true.
Could be true. Oh, all right. So we'll keep our eyes open for news on Star Trek Continues. I guess we should also mention that this is being done by Farragut Films. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know more about Star Trek Continues, just go to farragutfilms.com and you can find out what's happening there. And, you know, what the schedule is going to be like, release, and so forth. All right. So, Greg, I know still to this day you're sending me iMessages about how excited you still are about the release of the Star Trek IV complete soundtrack that came out some months ago.
Yeah, I leave pretty much as soon as the show stops, I put on the hospital chase music. And just play it on a loop until next week's show starts, and I have to pause, and we do the show. But that's pretty much my theme music.
Right. Yeah, everyone needs a theme song, right? This is something we all learned from Ally McBeal.
Right.
And that's yours, right? Except instead of the dancing baby, you have the dancing glomer that no one else can see but you.
Right.
And it explains so much.
It really does.
Yeah. Okay, so we got Star Trek IV, we got Star Trek VI, and now we have the complete score coming out from GMP Crescendo from First Contact. Now, this is a Jerry Goldsmith score, and I have to say, Greg, actually, in all honesty, the opening theme from Star Trek First Contact is one of the, for me, the most beautiful pieces of music from any Star Trek ever produced.
Yeah, it's the music that's over the like the blurry actors' names that suddenly come into focus. Yeah, that is. That's one of my favorite openers. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I just love that music. And so this one I'm actually quite excited about, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to get my hands on it or not, because it's only going to be available in physical form. And at least they have it at the GMP Crescendo Records store, online store. You can order the physical CD for $19.98. And I also read on their site that it's limited to 10,000 units, which sounds like a big number, but I mean, I guess it's really not. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to get one shipped over here or not.
I definitely hope it gets bigger than that, because this is one of the film scores I'm really looking forward to hearing. And there, as they point out, there was a lot left out of the original soundtrack release, including the actual First Contact music. That French horn that plays when the Vulcans land on Earth, and then Zefram Cochrane pulls out a phaser and shoots them, and they storm. Wait, am I getting this confused with something else?
I think you're still getting into Mirror Universe mode here today, Craig. Happened on Enterprise, didn't it?
Oh, you're right. You're right. Yes. Well, we just had First Contact Day. I don't know if they celebrate that in Japan or if that's just a U.S. national holiday. But April 5th, I believe, was First Contact Day, and I celebrated it by shooting as many Vulcans as I could.
Oh, really? That's how you did it? We do have First Contact Day in Japan, except they celebrate it in Akihabara, and it has kind of a different meaning. So that's how you spent your First Contact Day. See, what I did, I drank a lot of tequila. And I listened to Ooby Dooby a lot. And then when the jukebox broke, I just decided to go out and conduct some warp flight tests. And, you know.
Sounds safe.
And then we got to that French horn music that you're talking about, where the Vulcans walk down the platform and very, very dramatically remove the hood to reveal the ears, like we didn't know.
Right.
That it was going to be a Vulcan.
Well, I like the Vulcans. The Vulcans scanned us, and they said, they're very similar, but the eyebrows and the ears are different. So here's what we'll do. Pull out the hoods. We're going to all walk down dramatically. Don't show your ears. I will do the signal. When you see the signal, we're going to reveal the ears.
Exactly. You know what would have been really cool is if they had all come down the platform, and there was the one that walked down, the guy that walked down, and there were two other that waited by the door, right? If they all came out and they all had like a white band tied around their ears that they had ripped off of terracloth bathrobes.
Yes.
And then at that dramatic moment, they pull gently and it just falls off. Would have been so cool.
And then they all walk up and Vulcan neck pinch somebody playing a boombox.
Yes. Oh, man, that would have been great. So what are we talking about here? Oh, yeah, the First Contact score.
First Contact score, right? Which I'm very excited about because there's a lot of music here. So I'm hoping I can get my hands on it, because this is a really fantastic score, and I'm so glad Frakes was able to get Goldsmith to come back to the franchise to do First Contact.
Yeah, yeah. And about what's missing here, you're right. I have the original DVD, not DVD, the original CD that was released, and it's about 45 minutes long, and this one has about 80 minutes, almost 80 minutes of content, so
yeah.
It was an extra, 35. It really is a lot of additional music here. So if you love First Contact and the score and Jerry Goldsmith, go over to gmpcrescendo.com. I think if you go to store.gmpcrescendo.com, it'll take you right in there. And you'll
Very
see
cool.
the news item, click over, and you can get it. All right, Greg, well, while you're listening to this album, you're going to need somewhere to sit down. And I think that Think Geek has something to go along with your plush Enterprise that you have. You could play with that while you listen to the First Contact soundtrack.
Well, once I've got my Admiral Adama desk, in my living room, I need a chair to sit in while I'm at the desk. And I think this is exactly what I need. This is the ThinkGeek inflatable captain's chair.
Yes. This thing is pretty cool. I've tweeted about this a few times, and I've already gotten quite a few responses of people saying, I want this. And ThinkGeek has a great promotional video for this out as well. If you haven't seen this yet, you just go over to Trek.fm and Trek.fm/news into the Hyper Channel News Journal, and you'll see the news item for this. And we have the video there in the news item.
Yeah. And I think it was announced on April Fool's Day, I believe, where this is when I first heard about it. And a lot of people are thinking, oh, this is an April Fool's joke, and maybe down the line they'll make it into an actual product. But No. This is a real product that they are selling right now.
It is, actually, because when I came across this item, that was my first thought, too. I said, this is an April Fool's joke. And we put this in Hyper Channel this past Thursday, and I went back again and checked again several times. I have to make sure this is a real item. And they have on the page, they're like, really? This really exists?
Right.
And I even clicked buy just to make sure that it would put it in my shopping cart, and it did. So,
right. It showed up to your living room, and you blew it up, and you sat in it, and then you published Hyper Channel. Because this is the extent we go to make sure that we're not getting, you know, this American life and fooled and had one over on us.
That's right. Yeah, I had to make sure. And I had to make sure that all the little buttons that are printed on the arms worked as well.
Did you send Troy a text message to crash the ship?
Yeah, I did. And now I have a broken television set that I have to replace. And man, I really have to be careful what I tell Troy. I meant to text bubble bath, but I texted ram the ship instead. The ship. So, yeah. But ThinkGeek, they make a point of saying that this is great for children and small adults. But yet in their own promotional video, they've got this guy that kind of looks like Chris Farley. I mean,
yes.
He doesn't look like Chris Farley, but he reminds me of Chris Farley in terms of overall size.
Well, maybe it's like the Lord of the Rings, and all the locations you go to are actually sets that are built at a small scale so that he appears large, but he actually is only about 3'5".
Maybe that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So but no, if you're a fully sized adult, you probably shouldn't sit in this chair, according to what they're saying. It's up to about 120 pounds.
Right.
So your kid should, you know, definitely sit in and feel what it's like to be the captain. I mean, Captain Kirk in the new film was, what, 14, 15? I'm sure he could sit in the captain's chair.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Kirk in the last JG film was probably, what would you say, maybe like 90 pounds? About 14 years old, 100
yes.
pounds maybe?
The youngest captain in Starfleet.
I mean, it was really weird when McCoy was telling him that you have to turn the bridge over now because it's 7:30 and it's your bedtime. I thought they were going to cut that out, but you know, the writer's strike, they couldn't really modify the script. So,
and that was the scene that had so many other important things, like about Spock and Uhura's dog that they're adopting. And it also had, you know, the introduction of Chekhov's girlfriend, and they just couldn't cut the whole scene.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Well, that must be why here on the ThinkGeek page, under product specifications, it says for ages 3 to J.J. Kirk. So that explains things.
Definitely does.
But anyway, this is a pretty cool item. The video is hilarious. It's this guy. It's basically a day in his life. He wakes up. He has breakfast. He goes to work. He comes home. Someone pointed out in the comment threads on YouTube for the video that he comes home and he makes dinner for his son, who it looks like he's probably like 9 or 10. Mm-hmm. And then they watch TV together, but there's no mother anywhere to be seen. And someone commented that, of course, there's no mother. His wife left him.
Exactly.
Probably for the chair. You know, it's like... I think my favorite scene is at the office when he takes the inflatable captain's chair into the toilet stall in the bathroom. And then in the next scene, he's outside hosing it down.
I hope he would be.
Oh man! So go over to Think Geek, and you'll find this there as well as the video, and we have the video on our website. Very cool item.
Yeah.
I wanna be by myself. Sometimes I do. I don't wanna be left behind, but sometimes I'm left by you. I press my tongue to the top of my mouth 'cause my jaw's tired from the thinking. And I stretched my toes to the end of the couch 'cause my back, it was aching from sleeping. So what is this weather and what is this darkness? And why do I feel so alone? And when will it snow? It's been raining for hours. And why do I feel so alone?
All right, Greg. Well, so time for some movie news and rumors here. Actually, it's not much news this time, but when I read this story, I had to kind of laugh a little bit. Apparently, George Takei is resigned to the fact that there will be no more original series cameos in the J.J. Abrams Star Trek sequels. Now, are you upset about this as well?
Yeah, I was. Well, so this was at Emerald City Comic Con, and I was sitting in the audience, and when he said this, the tears welled up. I didn't know what to do. If George Takei isn't going to be in the next Star Trek film, I don't know how I'm going to get by. I really don't. But he must get this question, you know, every con he goes to. I'm actually forgetting if this was a fan question or if this was Danny Bonaducci asking yet another dumb question.
Why? Oh, really? Because I thought maybe George Takei brought it up completely on his own. So that's
you know,
what I
you know
thinking.
What, Danny? You know what? I will not be in the new Star Trek film.
And I'm okay with that.
I'm okay. That's okay. No, I'm trying to remember. No, he did mention, of course, Leonard was in the last one, and he sounded like he would do a cameo role, but he was saying, you know, JJ wants to get away from these films, and it was quite funny. He said that it's good that they're getting away from having these people in the new films, because all this running down corridors, you know, he can't imagine Bill Shatner doing that. And when he was saying this, he was sort of huffing and puffing and doing his Bill Shatner impression.
But did he say that in the last movie when they had the sword fight on the drilling platform that should have all been done shirtless?
You know, there was actually
fencing foils.
There was a fan there who asked Takei if he would go topless sword fight with him. Oh. And George said, well, I don't know. Let me see your top. I'm not making this up. It was a fun panel, actually. And another thing he talked about was the Excelsior TV series, which I texted you afterwards. I'm still convinced he thinks they're going to be shooting the pilot this summer.
Now, this is not the April Fool's joke that I think Trek movie did. This is actually, as you and I have talked about many times, I don't know, on this show or just on the other side of the room, that we really do think that George believes that at some point CBS is going to come and say, we've greenlit that Excelsior series, right?
Yeah. And he's still to this day convinced that Star Trek VI was all a big setup for the Excelsior series. And I don't think I'm out of line here, but I talked with a friend of the show, Larry Nemechek, and I don't know if he talked with Nicholas Meyer or if he just heard this through the grapevine, but Meyer says, no, that is by no means. They never had any plans for an Excelsior series. But that was just a little B story.
If that's true, then what's the deal with this memo? It was supposed to be confidential, but you know, things leak on the internet. I saw this memo that was floating around from the same time where they apparently were in contract negotiations anyway with Christian Slater to make a brief cameo appearance in every episode of the Excelsior series. He was just going to pop in a corridor here or there, make just to pass along information, usually in very darkly lit scenes.
Yes, that would. I love the.
How do you explain that?
I love the opening credits to Star Trek Excelsior, and it's Star Trek Excelsior, starring George Takei, written and directed by George Takei. Executive producer, George Takei. Also starring Christian Slater.
Yeah. It seemed kind of repetitive to me, but you know, that's what the graphics department came up with. They're like, look, it's in the contract. His name's going to appear three times. So,
well, actually, I don't know if you realize, but the Enterprise theme song was actually about George Takei's struggle to get Excelsior made. It was originally going to be Excelsior's. I've got faith that my show will be made. No one's going to bend or break me. It's actually quite moving when you hear George Takei sing it.
It is, although I like the original version, not the pepped up one that they were going to use in the third season.
Right.
Yeah, the original one I thought really captured the spirit of that show.
It really did.
Very well, yeah. Oh, but except for the part where the Excelsior warps off at the very end, but they go, oh my. It's a nice touch, but yeah. All right, so I guess that's our movie news, which is only loosely related to movies since it's mostly about George Takei. But
right.
I just to circle back around, though, yes. Just for a second, Greg. Now, how would you even use Sulu in the next J.J. Abrams movie or a future one?
Okay.
I mean, Prime Sulu.
Prime Sulu. Okay. Yeah. So here's the situation. So the Vulcans are massing, and they're going to attack Romulus to avenge the explosion of the destruction of Vulcan. And basically, our Sulu isn't sure which side he wants to be on, because he had a girlfriend who was a Vulcan in the academy, and he's conflicted about it, as pretty much all these characters are extremely conflicted. And basically, Prime Sulu has to come into our universe just to convince Sulu which side he's going to be on. It's a, you know, it's not the A story. It's not the B story. It's not the C story. That's about Spock and Uhura's dog. But there's a scene, basically he transporters in, has a conversation with Sulu, and leaves. It's not really a D story. It's a scene. There's a scene. They got him in the film. He's happy.
And I have the feeling that this scene is only going to appear in the special features on the DVD release.
Very possibly.
Oh, goodness. All right. Well, we all have learned a lot of things from Star Trek over the years, and one thing that we learned from the original series is that you should never beam up during a lightning storm, because when you do that, bad things happen. And that's what we found out in the episode Mirror, Mirror, which had our crew get stuck in the Mirror Universe, which James L. Conway has called dark and sexy, and there's no subtlety over there. He said that in the Deep Space Nine Companion, and I think he has a point. And today we're going to talk about the Mirror Universe. And I have with me Greg, of course. And, you know, Greg, we had some other people with us, but it seems like we lost them when we passed through that wormhole. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in here right now.
Yeah, really. Unfortunately, Mike and Dan will not be joining us today. They're stuck in a pattern buffer.
You know, what do you think Mirror Mike and Dan are like? Now, I know, at least according to Larry, in our own universe, Mike and Dan, they put on one hell of a morning sports talk show. And what do you think Mike and Dan do in the Mirror Universe?
That's very interesting. I'm actually not entirely sure. I mean, what are sports like in the Mirror Universe?
I think they're pretty much
Mirror football. It's pretty dark.
I think so. I mean, I know the referees, they don't throw penalty flags. They just zap you with that agonizer.
Right.
Which is not that bad, really, because when you get back to the locker room after you lose, the coach puts you in the agonizer booth, and that's never a fun thing. But
and instead of having to get traded to the New York Jets, you just have to kill Tim Tebow.
Oh, God. because in the Mirror Universe, Tim Tebow is like a really bad, bad guy, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, he deserves it. I mean, he deserves it. But in the Mirror Universe, he really deserves it.
Oh, man. I never thought that we would have a Tim Tebow joke on the Ready Room. But like I said, a lot of weird things
I've been talking to Mike and Dan too much.
I think so. I mean, look, here are some other weird things here. First of all, Greg, where is your beard? I mean, your face looks so smooth. That's weird.
I do. I usually have a big lustrous beard, but I wanted to make sure that you knew the difference between regular Greg and Mirror Universe Greg.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure if the skin-tight catsuit would be quite enough.
Well, I know another problem for Mirror Universe Greg is the fact that in the Mirror Universe, Ronald D. Moore never produced Battlestar Galactica, and so Mirror Greg...
No!
Mirror Greg just has a really hard time comparing Star Trek to other things. For some reason, he's always comparing Star Trek to Babylon 5, which I find odd, but I don't really like that. Another weird thing, Greg, is have you noticed my Auburn sweatshirt that I'm wearing here? Now, that's something that you'd never see normal Universe Chris doing.
No, certainly not. Anyway, maybe we should talk about the actual Deep Space Nine episodes.
Oh, you mean the Star Trek Mirror Universe,
yes.
Not our own. Okay.
Right.
So, Craig, why don't we, let's talk about this a little bit. This is we're back around to DS9 here. So primarily, we want to talk about how DS9 handled the Mirror Universe. I guess as a starting point, though, we should talk about the original series just for a moment. And what happened in that episode, because the first DS9 episode set in the Mirror Universe in Season 2 was Crossover, which really, although maybe you don't generally think of it this way, it really is a sequel to Mirror Mirror.
Oh, it certainly is. And they even talk about it on the show. Kira, Mirror Kira. Sort of says,
yeah.
Mirror... Wow. Says to Kira Prime, you know, have you heard of James T. Kirk? And Kira sort of gives her this blank look. James T. who? And she explains that in the Mirror Universe, you know, everyone knows about James T. Kirk, who came over and brought, well, reform to the Terran Empire, but also pretty much brought with him Spock, who pretty much caused the destruction of the Empire, the collapse in the end.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think you told me, like, Kira Prime. Are we going to call her Kira Prime? I feel like, is JJ in negotiations to do a reboot of DS9? But
Kira's 15. Okay. She's like Katniss Everdeen, basically, in this version, only instead of the Hunger Games, she's running around shooting Cardassians.
Right, when she's 7, because she becomes a first officer of Deep Space Nine when she's 15, right?
Right.
Overnight. About 3 hours, right. I think, right? Anyway, you said she apparently has no idea who James T. Kirk is, but she's quite familiar with Alice in Wonderland.
Right. I mean, you've got to read the classics, and who cares about reading the encyclopedia when you've got Frank Carroll?
Oh, gosh.
But yes, they do. They reference
they do.
The original series, which is, it's something, I mean, we talk about this a lot, the way DS9's different from Next Gen and different from Voyager even, in that they're very often very willing to reference the original series whenever they can.
They do, and I like the way they do it, and it's one reason why we wanted to talk about this today in particular, because on Voyager... Whenever it comes up, I mean, they mention Kirk a few times, but it's always Janeway trying to figure out a situation and looking through the Starfleet Federation database and pulling out a quote. You know, she has the 24th century edition of Bartlett's famous quotations, and she has a little post-it sticking out on the Kirk section. So she flips through it, and then she calls, you know, Tuvok or Chakotay or whoever into her ready room, and she quotes it. And,
right, and my favorite Kirk quote that Janeway follows is, "The Prime Directive is extremely important, unless the writers forgot it exists this week."
Yeah, He was famous for saying that. So, but I don't know. I always hated it on Voyager when Janeway would quote Kirk because it really felt like the writers were thinking, oh, we've got to put an original series reference in this episode. And just from time to time, let's throw it in. Whereas when DS9 did it, it really felt like they were picking up a thread and then they were making it their own. You know, they were really doing their DS9 thing with it. And that's totally what they did in the Mirror Universe, which, although the Mirror Universe was established in the original series, and then Enterprise revisited it with the kind of out there Inner Mirror Darkly, the bulk of the Mirror Universe lives in DS9. And I think that's something that fans maybe kind of forget sometimes, because we do really think of Mirror Mirror all the time when we think about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's books based in it too, non-canon novels. But yeah, the majority of these are in DS9. And it's interesting, as we did this week, to watch them in sequence, one after another.
Yeah.
As we said, there's a Mirror Universe episode for basically seasons 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. So it's really only one per season, and they missed a couple seasons. But if you watch them in order, it's like a little mini series. It's like they were very specifically planning, let's do the next episode, let's make sure it follows right back from the last one and picks up story threads.
Yeah.
It's very cool how they do that. It's almost like its own little Mirror Universe miniseries. I feel like they should be releasing that as one of those Blu-ray sets we were talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it is like that. They did a really good job of these events are taking place in the Mirror Universe, even though all this other stuff's going on over here. And then when they do revisit it, they're picking up the events that happen. And
it's a world that's continuing, even while our world's going on. You know, it's been a year, you know. The Rebels have taken control of Terek Nor, you know. Quark's been killed. A bunch of the things have happened. You know, Rom's running the bar now. It's this whole other world. I can't think... What's cool about the Mirror Universe, to me, is that this is a universe that is... What's the word I want to use? It's a continuing universe. It doesn't get created in a transporter accident and then the reset button's hit and it goes away. It's treated as a real world. People from there are real people. And if you kill one of them, that's an actual consequence, because that's a version of our character. It's not just, there's so many episodes, especially from Voyager, where there's a parallel universe that, you know, everyone has to die to save our people. And it's only around for that one episode. But the Mirror Universe is treated with, a lot of respect. And they keep just going back to it as, like, this is an established thing that we don't have to, sell you on every time. And that's cool and that's unique.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's DS9's quality. That's DS9 itself as a series. Develops our own universe in this broad way, that we've talked about before. There's stuff going on all over the place. And then they maintain that with the Mirror Universe. And they really created that too, because in the, all the original series did was plant the seeds for the Mirror Universe. They go there and it really is all simply about our Kirk, and who else went over? Uhura.
I think Kirk, Spock, and Uhura, I think.
Bones was there as well, right? It's just about...
Really? Was it like the whole crew?
No, it wasn't the whole crew, but it was... it was Bones there, because remember, evil Spock mind-melds with Bones, But,
And of course, Mirror Sulu and Prime Sulu have a sword fight, and Mirror Chekhov and Prime Chekhov are trying to pronounce the letter V.
That was my favorite part, when they were having the pronounce-off. That was really awesome. But it was about that, and then of course there was the philosophical idea that you know ideas can change circumstances, and Kirk planting the seeds that evil Spock could change the Federation and this evil empire, the Terran Empire that was there. But then they left it, and they never went back to it. And so DS9 right. here is picking it up. But like you said, with the continuing universe, that universe continued from that point all the way up until DS9 picked it up, because there is the whole backstory that, you know, Spock succeeded and Spock became the, you know, the commander in chief, the head of the Terran Empire, mm-hmm. and made them change their ways, but then they became weak, and then the Cardassian Klingon alliance jumped on them, and then the Terrans right. become slaves.
Well, maybe we can talk about real quick at least what we think is the real differences between our world and the mirror universe.
Okay.
You know, if you look at the JJ verse, the alt, as I call it, there's a very particular point. That's Nero's incursion. The moment Nero entered our universe and destroyed the Kelvin and killed, now I'm forgetting his name, George Kirk, yeah. He changed history. And now everything that follows from there is going to be different based on that. It's the whole butterfly effect. But what exactly is the difference here? You know, people are meaner, as they say, sexier. There's less subtlety. Where does that come from? You know, what is the incursion point? What is the reason that it's different? And in what way are things different? And what's your take on that?
Interesting question. It seems everybody's mean, right? I mean, so the Terrans were mean.
Right, yeah.
But I guess this isn't really, sometimes I get confused about information that's put out from the writers versus what's actually on the screen.
Right.
I know that the concept that Robert Hewitt Wolfe had was that the Terran Empire was evil because they had a reason to be evil. He said this, I know this is on Memory Alpha, but I think it actually is from discussions in the DS9 Companion, which is a really great book, by the way, if anyone doesn't have that particular book. That he believes, anyway, that civilizations or empires are not evil just for the hell of being evil, that it's they're ruthless or evil or because there's a reason for it. And he said that for him, the Terran Empire was an analogy for the Roman Empire or for the Chinese dynasty. That if you think about these civilizations that had people on the outside that wanted to do them in, right?
Right.
And so they had to be tough to detour those others. And so in his eyes here, the Terran Empire that we saw in Mirror Mirror was the way it was because this Klingon-Cardassian alliance existed, even though that was never mentioned in the original series. It's kind of him thinking about the backstories. Why were these people like this when Kirk went there? And and so then when Spock eventually, at Kirk's urging, made the Federation, the Terran Empire, I keep calling them the Federation, but it's the Terran Empire in the Mirror Universe,
yeah.
made them to be more pacifists, then the outsiders pounce on them. And so I guess my point, going back to your question, is I'm not sure that there was ever anybody that was good in the Mirror Universe. It seems like everyone was evil to start with. It's just a matter of who's dominating whom in that case.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go back to In a Mirror Darkly, which, of course, came after DS9, but before it in the chronology. But you go all the way back to the teaser, as we talked about earlier in the show, where you have Zefran Cochran and the other humans pouncing on the Vulcans. So obviously this started well before they even went to space, well before they had any idea who the Klingons and the Cardassians were.
Well, okay, so that's interesting that I always felt that grew out of the fact that humanity is portrayed in its earlier years, even in Star Trek, as being barbaric. You know, Spock would make references to how human history was, you know, bloody, humans like to fight. And, you know, we don't really know with that history of In a Mirror Darkly if World War III happened the way that it happened in our universe or not.
Right.
I mean, you could say, what was the turning point in our universe that made humans turn away from being warlike? You know, was it...
Right.
It was, I think, World War III, what happened after World War III, plus, as they're rebuilding from that, then they meet the Vulcans. And so, mm-hmm. like, those events together kind of set humanity on a course of being more peaceful. Whereas in the mirror universe that we saw in Enterprise, maybe that didn't quite happen. They were still very warlike. So when the Vulcans landed, they just killed the Vulcans. Right.
It's very possible. I have a pet theory, and I'm not trying to say that anything you've said is incorrect. But my pet theory is that the mirror universe, the breaking point was that scene they show in the teaser. And the difference is the Enterprise D crew or the Enterprise E crew isn't there in Montana to sort of help the people through this and let Zefram Cochrane know what happened. He still managed to make it to warp. But when the Vulcans came, he didn't know not to be afraid, basically. And that just set this whole course of events in motion. Like I say, it's my own pet theory. There's no novel, non-canon or otherwise that backs us up. But I like that idea that the Terran Empire began there when they realized there are other things out there and we just continued being like we are today. And we never got that influence from the 24th century that we needed to greet the aliens.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it all comes down to that we were warlike and we never changed.
Yeah.
But the Terran Empire itself, with the fleet of ships conquering planets, meeting the Vulcans is when they find out, oh, there's more stuff out there. We now have the ability to go out there. Let's find out where these guys came from. I guess it's also, I don't think it's explained on screen anywhere, but I guess maybe Vulcan was one of the first worlds that the Terran Empire conquered, perhaps.
Right. And that makes a lot of sense.
I don't think that's ever been actually laid out, but yeah. Yeah, so that's interesting.
Yeah, but that... Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense, which I'm not sure how that leads into Tuvok being a Federation officer, but I'm... Whatever. Well, that also doesn't explain how... what's his name? Vic Fontaine ends up as a human?
Okay, I have to say that I liked the fact that Tuvok was there because it also showed that all of the larger universe of Star Trek exists in its mirror form, but people's lives are different. And so I like the fact that Tuvok was there with them when that happened. And was that in Through the Looking Glass where he shows up? Or was it Shattered Mirror?
It was the second episode, Through the Looking Glass.
Yeah. So I like that.
He's with that group of rebels.
Yeah, with the rebels. Now, the Vic Fontaine, that one, that was very funny. Oh, man. But that's at the point where the writers were saying, you know, they could just do basically whatever they wanted to do. They always said that when the studio let them do Vic Fontaine, they knew that the studio would let them do whatever they wanted with Deep Space Nine at that point. So,
yeah. Well, so let's see. As we're continuing talking about the history, did Empress Hoshi, we're not going to talk about Enterprise too much.
I knew this was going to come up.
Hopefully, this episode. But, okay, Empress Hoshi, was this the first, this wasn't the beginning of the Terran Empire, but this was the beginning of the complete domination of the Terran Empire until Spock screwed everything up. This is the way I look at it. When she brought the Defiant and they got all this new 23rd century technology, this was when they were really able to crush all of their enemies. So that's another interesting thing to think about, that we've seen like pretty much all the really important events of the Mirror Universe. And it is, like I say, this whole fleshed out history.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I think that is the point there where the domination started for them. Now, I knew you were going to bring up Empress Hoshi. Now, how's that figure coming along that you're building in your garage there?
bit by bit. I'm building Empress Hoshi. She will be mine, assuming I don't get too many more restraining orders. So, but I guess, nice. So we were talking about pretty much the first three episodes mainly. Yeah. I don't want to say who it was because I'm not sure if I'm going to quote them properly, but they sort of called these episodes the weird stepsister of DS9, these Mirror Universe episodes. What did you think going back and watching them sort of in sequence with the idea that we're going to talk about them on the show? Did they just, how'd they strike you?
See, I didn't feel that way at all. I think I actually like the way that DS9 took the Mirror Universe and made it fit within the whole DS9 mythos, I guess, with the Bajorans. You know, you have, I think, Resurrection, the fourth Mirror Universe episode in DS9. You actually have Vedic Grell mm-hmm. coming over. I thought that they did a really good job. You've got Sisko's wife, who is a professor, mm-hmm. who's developing the sensor array thing for the Alliance. And of course,
you could just call it the Death Star.
The Death Star, yeah, it's basically what it was. She's helping the Alliance build the Death Star, and the fact that she died in the pilot episode. You know, actually, the flashback mm-hmm. scenes of the pilot episode.
Right.
The fact that she is then a main character in the Mirror Universe in the DS9 episode, for me, is a way that they're really tying everything together. I mean, when you say, like, the stepchildren of it, it makes it feel like it's something that doesn't quite fit with everything else.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But I thought in all these episodes that they did a good job of making it fit and tying those two universes together, and it all felt like DS9 to me. And there were even like repercussions back and forth, you know, both ways as well.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I really enjoyed the three episodes I watched last night. I don't know if I'd seen them since I had my whole DS9 rewatch a few years ago, but going back and watching them, it was, yeah, these are quality DS9 episodes. And it's, you know, obviously they are a departure from the regular DS9 narrative. And, you know, my roommate was watching with me and she hasn't really seen much of DS9. And it's weird for her to be the first experience she gets with many of these characters.
That's true.
You know, I was sort of giving her the season 2 primer to the show. And I said that Julian Bashir, he's a bit of an ass. And then he absolutely is. But then we meet the mirror Julian Bashir. And this is just the worst guy imaginable. I mean, he's a good guy. But wow, he just takes being an ass to another level.
Actually, there's in The Companion, they asked some of the actors about how they played their roles there. And Alexander Siddig was talking about Bashir, and he said that he wanted him to be the inverse of Dr. Bashir, but I'm not sure if he's really the inverse of Dr. Bashir. And obviously, he said Bashir wouldn't hurt a fly, but this guy is unstable, difficult, and stupid. That's what Siddig said about it.
I think this might be, you know, how like movie villains think they're the hero of their own movie. I think Bashir might be the hero of his own show, and Alexander Siddig is indeed the hero of his own show.
Maybe.
And has sort of a skewed idea. I mean, Bashir becomes a great guy as the show goes on, especially O'Brien's influence on him, but especially season 2 and 3, or 1, 2, and 3, yeah. as the Mirror Universe begins, even prime Bashir has some personality issues.
Yes. Well, season 1 and 2, Bashir. Now, I would agree with Siddig here that Bashir wouldn't hurt a fly, but season 1 and 2, Bashir is definitely the. We were talking about how when they do a Star Trek series, they have to have an arrogant womanizer. At least have a womanizer. They
right.
don't necessarily yes. have to be arrogant, but have a womanizer. So Bashir was DS9's womanizer at the beginning. And then they realized, well, maybe we don't really have to have a womanizer. So,
right. You're saying maybe he wouldn't hurt a fly, but he certainly would ask that fly out to dinner.
Well, he would totally ask that fly out for dinner. Yes, absolutely. He'd probably even invite that fly back over to his quarters. definitely. I can just see the lines, like, yeah. Right. Talk about the wings.
Now,
and yeah.
Let's see. Everything.
So, but I love here how he's like flirting. Basically, he's hitting on Kira at the beginning of
pretty much. I mean, he claims he wasn't, but no, I'm pretty sure that's what he was doing.
Oh, yeah, he's like, would you like to have dinner sometime? Oh, did you think I was asking you out to dinner? No, I wasn't doing that. But if you're free, would you like? Yeah, good cover. Good cover, Doctor.
Speaking of these things, so when, I guess we just talk about the interpersonal relationships a little bit. I guess it's the second episode where Sisko goes over and he's, is it just me or is Sisko always impersonating someone?
Well,
past tense in this one. There's some other ones too, I think.
He is, yeah. Although I think I think that the Mirror Universe Sisko was impersonating Avery Brooks based on the captains. So.
That sounds exactly.
That's what you were
exactly
thinking.
Spot on. Yeah. So when Prime Sisko goes over to the Mirror Universe and Jadzia walks up to him and kisses him. Okay, so I get it. If someone kisses you and you're supposed to be in character, you go with it. It's the whole improv yes and. But then he actually literally sleeps with Jadzia Dax.
Yeah.
And this doesn't go away. This isn't wiped away. There's no reset button. For the whole rest of the series, when Sisko looks at Jadzia, he knows what she looks like naked. Does he tell her about this? You know, the next time they're at dinner, you know, old man, I totally slept with you last week.
Right. So he slept with Curzon, right?
He really did. I mean, the Dax is in there. Dax knows what's happening.
Well, and then later he goes and sleeps with the intendant.
Right. Well. It's like, this is his chance, you know. Sisko has been wanting to sleep with everyone on the ship.
Yeah.
And this is his chance. This is his transporter accident his dreams have come true.
Right. Well, that's why
I'm sure
in later episodes of just regular DS9 episodes, when they detect those unauthorized transmissions going off the station, that's actually Sisko trying to contact Smiley to come pick him up for another trip to the Mirror Universe. It's kind of like an interdimensional booty call.
Exactly. So yes, Sisko was quite the guy. I was going to ask you, so we talk about the Mirror Jadzia being more than happy to sleep with Sisko. Who's your favorite of these Mirror Universe? Is it Smiley? Is it Gaius Baltar Bashir? Which of these characters do you really like?
If we're sticking with DS9 here, I probably like Smiley the best. Because he seems like, I don't know, Smiley and Aaron O'Brien are the most similar to one another of all the characters.
That's very true. Yeah, he seems very much now I'm trying to remember, like, the in role playing you can be, you know, chaotic neutral or all these things, and he seems like he's in both universes. He's the same orientation.
Yeah.
He's neutral good, lawful good in both universes. He never really does anything. I mean, I guess he kidnaps Sisko. I mean, that's like the worst thing he does on the show.
Yeah. It's only slight differences with him. Like in the Mirror Universe, he married a Japanese woman who plays a Korean character. It's just very slightly different.
Right. And right. That's so, I don't know. He changes the least that I can think of. Odo's pretty similar. I guess you could imagine
oh,
that
totally.
If our Odo Because, I mean, Odo, he's always changed. He's always just playing his role.
Yeah.
There's another Game of Thrones reference. So when the Cardassians were running the station, he was more than happy to be their security chief. And, oh, the Federation's here. Well, I'm totally going to follow Federation. You know, yeah, I can absolutely do that. So, yes, I can see Odo slipping into whatever role they give him. Although he dies pretty quickly, right? He dies in the first one.
He blows up.
And we don't see
him.
How
does he blow up, by the way? Is he made out of something different in the mirror universe? You know, some guy threw like a mace at him in one of the early DS9 episodes, and he turns liquid and it flies through his head, right? And here he gets shot, and he explodes.
Well, maybe in mirror universe, Odo is just, that's just what he looks like. He's not really a shapeshifter.
Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe that's it. The founders, they all live in some kind. They just have like houses. They don't have the great link. This is just
right.
It's like big subdivisions over the planet.
They just got little houses. So I'm trying to think of who else changes the least. Odo definitely. Worf, I guess. If Worf had grown up in the Klingon Empire, and
Worf, yeah.
And there was the whole Klingon Cardassian alliance. Yeah.
And Garak, too. I mean, I can certainly picture our own Garak being like that if he were still in the Obsidian Order.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Garak was interesting. I really liked the way they portrayed Garak. I mean, Garak is always a fascinating character, and you're always trying to figure him out. Actually, as I'm watching Game of Thrones, he reminds me of a lot of the character Lord Babish, who's sort of a whisperer at court. Who's always, you know, trying to, sort of the way he treats Regent Worf, and he's sort of trying to put the blame for everything on the Intendant, and sort of, there's that one moment where he's talking Klingon. He's like, we're going to destroy our enemies and wipe their you know, everything off the planet, and he's trying to sound all warrior-like, and Worf totally calls him on it. He's just like, well, that's what I'm doing. Like, what do you want from me?
I did like in there, there is a line in there where Garak says something like, I do like a good tailored suit. Something along those lines.
Ah, yes. There.
But yeah, you know, interesting thing about that is, going back to crossover, actually, that Worf was actually supposed to be in that episode, even though that's season two.
Yeah. That's before Michael Dorn joined the show, if I'm not mistaken. That's before they shaved the head.
I think The Way of the Warrior is the premiere of season four. Is that right? Or three? I think it's four.
Right. I think you're right. It definitely, definitely this episode, you're saying he was supposed to be in crossover or through the
crossover.
Looking Glass?
I'm trying to recall. He was supposed to be in crossover, but they were shooting in the end of The Next Generation at the time. And so they actually gave his lines to Andrew Robinson. So I think, I'm not clear on whether the character that Andrew Robinson plays, you know, of Garak there, was supposed to be Worf instead, or if Worf was going to be another character and those lines were given to the Garak character as well. So it was just like all Garak. I'm not 100% clear on what that plan was. But
my understanding is my understanding was that Worf was going to be sort of there on the station as maybe not Kira's second in command, but sort of the Klingon, the Klingon guy on the station, sort of as Garak was the Cardassian guy on the station. Worf would have been that for the Klingons, and that would have been quite interesting. Although I like what they do with him later in the show, sort of giving him his own ship and giving him his own story.
It's probably a really good thing that Michael Dorn was not available to shoot crossover because they could have still done what they did later on, you know, having Regent Worf, but it would have been a little bit odd because it wasn't going to be Michael Dorn playing a Klingon. It was going to be Worf, right, in crossover. So it would have been hard. I guess they would explain he got promoted and he became the Regent and he became Kira's boss.
Right.
And
sure.
I guess the Regent is Kira's boss, right?
Well, I mean, and there were some other characters that were cut from crossover as well. I mean, Marina Sirtis was going to play Empress Troi from the Beta Zed Empire. Data was going to be, you know, leading a fleet of androids that had been created by Dr. Sung in the Mirror Universe. They just wanted to cut some of those TNG characters because it was getting crowded, you know.
Yeah, it was. They did almost leave in, though, Mirror Wesley, who's really, really dumb guy. It was like always breaking everything around the station.
And not in the way that our Wesley sort of breaks it and then fixes it. No, Wesley just breaks things. He sort of trips over them. He sort of falls onto them. He just sort of walks up and pushes buttons.
He has no idea how anything works. So he's just like jabbing his fingers at buttons all the time. So, yeah.
In Mirror Encounter at Farpoint, he sits down on the captain's chair and he blows up Farpoint Station.
Oh, I can't wait to see a Mirror Encounter at Farpoint remastered on Blu-ray. And that's going to be a really nice one. Okay, well, those are the characters. I like what they did with the characters overall, though.
Mm-hmm.
And there are these other little touches, again, as we talk about how this universe lives, this mirror universe lives on its own, and events progress, and things are different. Jake only appears in, Shattered Mirror, I think, right? When
it's Shattered Mirror, yeah. And there's not even
right,
a
that's
mirror
what I was
Jake.
Say. He wasn't even born in the mirror universe.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, which is
another nice
really
touch.
Interesting.
That of the people exist, but their lives are different, and their lives go on. And again, quality of Deep Space Nine overall, that life goes on, things evolve, and they applied that to the mirror universe. Now, I did want to talk a little bit, Greg, about what I call through the Star Wars glass, which I guess really isn't very catchy, but it's, I was watching Through the Looking Glass and I just felt like I was watching Star Wars because, like we said earlier about the Death Star, so Jennifer Sisko is helping them build the Death Star. And I mean, there are just so many lines in there like, oh, we have to stop them from finishing the Death Star. If the Death Star becomes operational, they're going to find our hidden rebel base. And
right, and well, and then there's that scene where Smiley says, you know, Sisko, you must join the rebellion against the Empire and become a Jedi like your father.
Yeah. And he said, I thought my father was a Creole chef, but not in this universe.
My father joined the rebellion? My father was a Jedi Knight? I'd love to see Jedi Sisko. But yeah, it's that whole episode. They keep talking about the rebellion against the Alliance, and you know, everything's all the words are wrong. But yeah, I noticed that because you mentioned it beforehand. But it's exciting, you know. It's I like this universe. It's sort of like, you know, Scotty says with the alternate universe, how exciting things are here. You know, things blow up, people get shot. DS9 in general is pretty exciting, but the body count on these shows is just astonishing. You know, Rom gets killed, Quark gets killed. Who is it? Odo
gets killed at some point in these mirror universe.
Nog eventually gets killed. People just keep dying on the ship, it's that testament to they basically could do whatever they wanted, and you never could have all of our characters really buckle together. You never had a time in which the actual Klingon Empire took over and they had to fight back. You know, you had the Dominion War. That was pretty great. But you never had our guys being this much of underdogs, sort of underground guerrilla fighters. And it's a really great chance to see what our characters would do if in that situation.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It is. And with Through the Looking Glass, I really like the episode, even though the story reminds me of Star Wars so much. When I watched it in the past, I didn't think about the Star Wars connection quite as much. But this time when I was watching it, it was just hitting me back and forth, this whole thing about the rebellion and the sensor ray being operational and everything. And I felt a little bit like, boy, the writers, they like just basically picked this up. So it makes me wonder when they do put DS9 out on Blu-ray, because I'm sure they're going to remaster it at some point. With that particular episode, I mean, are they going to change things the way George Lucas did with Star Wars? I mean, is Jar Jar going to be working down in the refinery, or?
Well, I mean, this is they gave Worf's lines to Garak, but now they're going to give Garak's lines to Jar Jar.
Please let me kill him.
Let me make an example of him.
Let me let him die on the promenade. Slowly.
Misa does like a good suit.
Oh, okay. So that's hopefully never going to be released. I say that for sure. All right. What other thing we do need to talk about here, Greg? I did have a question for you. I think I know the answer, but mm-hmm. I have to ask anyway. This is a game that we like to play on the Ready Room called Dax the Intendant or Empress Hoshi.
Well, I would kill the Intendant. I would marry Dax. Wait, is that the game we're playing?
Well, we already know you're building a figure of Empress Hoshi. So I guess I know the answer to this one.
Yes, indeed. I the things they do with the female characters, I shudder to hear or to see what Mirror 7 of 9 looks like.
She probably wears like baggy sweatshirts and ripped up blue jeans. And, yeah.
It's like that scene from Battlestar where Six is like, she just, you know, came from working out and she's got the sweatpants on and a t-shirt. And Baltar's like, what are you? What's going on? Why aren't you wearing a dress? So say
we all. I wonder here if the black leather outfit here, is this the same one that they used on Voyager when they had a Kes wearing a black leather?
Ah, yes. The black leather. That, there's got to be... I want to know where the seed was for the black leather in the Mirror Universe. Because that's... You definitely... And I think they actually changed Kira's outfit from crossover to... Through the Looking Glass, because the first one they made for her was like really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I read she said she had to stand in front of a giant fan when they weren't shooting because she would start sweating and the sweat would discolor the costume. Oh man, you know these costumes they come up with. I mean, some of them look cool. Not just the leather stuff, but just costumes in general on Star Trek. They look cool on the screen. But you always hear about how impossible these things are to wear.
Yeah. Yeah, really. Though it was an interesting thing that they sort of incorporated some of Mirror Odo's outfit into his real life outfit, because he liked that one so much better that after Crossover aired, his outfit changed to be more like the Mirror one, which, I don't know, did Kira come back and she was like, Odo, you'll never believe, but you didn't look stupid. You had this amazing outfit.
She says, look, I snapped a picture of it.
You got to imagine there's a scene, deleted
on
scene.
My eye tricorder.
Right. Yeah, and I guess all Odo has to do is to sort of imagine it and make it happen. So it's probably the most realistic costume change, because Odo can just make a costume change happen whenever he feels like it. That also explains away all the makeup changes over the years, because that's just Odo. It's not like Worf, where Worf's forehead keeps changing and it doesn't really make any sense.
He has some kind of disease that causes his skull to change shape rapidly.
He doesn't like to talk
about it.
Speaking
of Odo, though, that explains why so much of the behind-the-scenes footage from DS9 is censored, because the costumes, you know, they're uncomfortable to wear. So when the camera's not running, Odo just gets rid of that costume. Those scenes like around the water cooler, you've always got that little mosaic going on down there all the time. It's kind of bizarre, but
nice.
All right, well, I guess overall, just in the Mirror Universe, at some point in the future, you know, I think we'll talk more about each individual episode, you know, and the events that happen into it.
Definitely.
But just kind of kicking off us thinking about the Mirror Universe and DS9, are there any other connections, or, you know, to the original series, any other elements of how DS9 handled the Mirror Universe that, you know, really stick out to you?
I guess the main thing I haven't talked about the Mirror Universe is how much I like the idea of the Alliance, that you have the Cardassians and the Klingons teaming up to become the first real threat against the Federation. You know, of course, I mean, okay, we have the Dominion in DS9, but here's us treating the Cardassians and Klingons like they could actually just take over the entire galaxy, which I guess they kind of have. You got to figure Earth is still somewhat free, that they haven't let Earth get taken over, but a large majority of the galaxy has at this point been taken over. And that's a really good thing. I always wanted them to use these alien races like that on the actual show. You know, show the Klingon Federation War, show the Romulan Federation War. And the Mirror Universe is a great chance for them to break out of their shell of the Federation being at peace and experiment with what happens when there has to be this full-scale warfare.
Yeah, I agree. It was interesting. What also struck me as interesting there with that alliance is the fact that the Bajorans are part of the alliance, to the fact that you know, Kira as a Bajoran is the intendant of Terok Nor. And she mentions, and it's the discussion between the intendant and our own Kira in the office there, where the intendant mentions that Bajor was under occupation by the Terran Empire for so long, and when they finally broke free. Right. So it was kind of like their histories. Actually, I found it odd in that discussion because our Kira says something like, oh, yeah, our history was nothing like that. Our Bajor was not nearly as fortunate. Something along those lines. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. Wait, now she just told you that they were under occupation by the Terran Empire. And it sounded, right. it was implied that they had to do the same type of freedom fighting that they did in our universe. And when they broke free, instead of petitioning for membership in the Federation, yeah. They petitioned for membership into this alliance.
You've got to imagine, though, that even as bad as the Terran Empire is, they're not quite as bad as being under control of the Cardassians. It's got to be worse. And they still want their freedom, but I think what was being implied was that they were. It was sort of like the America being under the British Empire. It was bad. It wasn't good. They were being overtaxed. And then they had to have their own, you know, Bajoran Tea Party. But it wasn't to the level of the Cardassians are there, like, shooting your mom just constantly. That, at least that's the sense I got. Anyway, in that scene, I loved having the two Kiras, especially where Prime Kira says, I'm Kira Nerys! Yeah.
That was great.
Really good stuff. They never played that. That was the only time, at least in these three episodes, where they played the two of the same person sort of having a conversation. And I loved it because Kira's the exact correct character, especially the intendant, the exact person to meet another version of herself and sort of fall in love.
That's true, yeah. Well, I think Bashir might fall in love with himself, but...
Let's not... It's bad enough that Bashir has himself to be around. Let's not actually give him another
right.
version of himself. That
Although
would go nowhere.
You were
good.
Disappointed that they didn't have the scene where Lita and Mirror Lita play Dabo against each other, right?
Dabo, 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 Dabo. They just keep shouting Dabo at each other.
Yeah, the scene with the two Kiras is good. And actually, the whole time I'm watching, it was so extensive. I was watching it. I was actually picturing them shooting that. And the work, because at the time that was shot, I mean, it'd be a lot easier to do these days, but I was watching their eyes to see like where is mm-hmm. their eye line as Nana is delivering those lines, and then they have to composite that.
So,
she actually did a really good job with that.
Very impressive. I mean, there were some shots in there that were actually really hard to do, like groups of people milling about mm-hmm. behind them. And they just made it work, and the eye line was spot on. It wasn't like Bill Shatner, who apparently thinks his eye line is at his mouth or something. Every time they have two Kirks, he just... How hard is it to look at eye level of yourself?
Right? I know. Because there's a lot of bad stuff in Episode 1 in Phantom Menace, like where they're talking to Jar Jar.
Oh, yes.
And it's like Ewan McGregor looks like he has lazy eye or something. He's like looking off over yes. here, and then Jar Jar's right there, you know? So there, right. there wasn't anything like that in here. Yeah, I thought she did a really good job.
But I felt like Nana Visitor did a really fantastic job of hitting her eye line. Like Ronald Moore talks about on the Battlestar commentaries, not all actors can do that.
So say we all.
It does take a particular actor to know their own rhythm, to be able to do their rhythm back at themselves. And yeah, she did a fantastic job. That's probably, of the three episodes I watched last night, I'd say Crossover was my favorite, mainly because of that interaction between Mirror and Prime Kira.
Yeah, I think Crossover is my favorite of these as well. Although I do like the story and the flow of the story of Through the Looking Glass. But Crossover, because it established the whole thing and they talk about Kirk and you actually find out what happened after so long as well.
Yeah.
And plus the work there with Kira is quite good too. All right. Well, I think we've pretty much covered all the basics of DS9 Mirror Universe, and we'll kind of use this as a setup for some future Ready Rooms where we can talk more in depth about some of the specific stories as well. And mm-hmm. And Greg, you realize today's Easter, isn't it?
It really is.
What
yes.
Easter's like in the Mirror Universe? They
Everyone paints eggs. You know, it's pretty much the same. They paint eggs and make a whole basket of them. Then they just throw them at each other,
rather than hiding them. Right. I was just thinking as you know, we were putting together this show and trying to see if anyone was available to come on with us. That we did a show. We recorded a show on Christmas Day, Greg, and now we record a show on Easter. So
yeah,
what's the deal with us and holidays? It's like.
I know it's. I'm always available on holidays. That's and for you, it's like the next
here,
day.
So
but yes,
none of these holidays are holidays for me. So I'm always here.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, last week we missed the show, and this week it's a major national holiday. But no,
the
we're soldiering on.
That's right.
Yes, it must. So I'm definitely looking forward to coming back to the Mirror Universe. We've got two more episodes of DS9 that we need to do. We have. Two episodes, well, the two-parter of Enterprise, and we still have Mirror Mirror itself to hit. So we've got a whole Mirror Universe ready to be plundered in upcoming episodes.
And don't forget
episodes.
The show where we're going to talk about all of the non-canon Mirror Universe novels and short stories.
Including the ones that were directly contradicted by DS9.
Yeah, definitely going to talk about those too. All right, Greg. Well, why don't we, let's just wrap up the show here this week and tell everyone how they can contact us if they'd like to share their thoughts on the Mirror Universe, if they would like to answer our question, Dax the Intendant or Empress Hoshi, or anything else they want to share with us this week. If you just go to trek.fm/contact, you'll find a form there. You can send us a text message. And we definitely would love to hear from you. Encourage everyone to write to us. Tell us your thoughts. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Google Plus with our short link, hyperchannel/trekfmgplus. And you'll find us on Twitter, which is where we're talking about Star Trek pretty much around the clock. And that's username trekfm to keep that really simple for everybody. And Greg, everyone can find you on Twitter as well.
Yes, indeed. They can find me at Greg Harbin, GregHarb, B as in boy, IN. And I've been doing something really I've been quite enjoying over the past couple weeks, inspired by a typo from a friend of the show, Stephanie. She was trying to write word of advice, but she instead put hashtag wharf of advice. So I've been tweeting wharf of advice, words of advice from wharf.
Yes.
Including the one I did on April 5th. Celebrate First Contact Day the way it was intended. Full contact mating.
Hashtag Wharf of Advice.
Exactly.
So if people want to play Wharf of Advice with you, they could just hop over to Twitter at Greg Harbin, right? And they'll find you there.
Yes.
Sounds like a good game. It's a little bit better than my some of my ones from years past. Hashtag Star Trek with breakfast, which was insert Star Trek into common breakfast foods. I kind of like Wharf of Advice a little bit better, I think. So, all right. And you'll find me on Twitter as well. My username is CBrianJones. That's Brian with a Y. And hopefully I will begin tweeting a little bit more again soon, both from there and Trek FM. It's been a wild couple of weeks here, but we're kind of getting back into the swing of things. So I look forward to talking to you on there. And, of course, you can go over to the site, trek.fm, and you can find feature articles, all our other shows, games, and Trek Trivia as well. You can play Trek Trivia. I need to do a Mirror Universe Trek Trivia, I believe. The current one is you can match up famous quotes from Captain Kirk with the episodes from which they come. All right, Greg. Well, that just about does it for this show. So I'm going to head back. I'm going to modify a transporter, see if I can get myself back over to the real ready room, because it's going to be morning here in a few hours, and I got to catch the Mike and Dan show, you know, find out what's happening in the world of sports.
All right, Chris. I think it's time to stick them with the pointy end, because the ready room is done. It's a sword. It's a sword, Chris. It's a reference to a sword.
It really sounded like you said the porny end. It's not the porny end. It's the pointy end.
The porny end. That's a whole other show.